Here at home, the U.S. Supreme Court is about to hear a challenge to the American political tradition of gerrymandering. That's when you draw political districts so they're skewed toward one party. This practice is so old that it is named after Elbridge Gerry, a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Today, some critics say gerrymandering is one reason that most elections for the U.S. Congress are barely contested. Democrats in Pennsylvania are now challenging the district plan drawn by the state's Republican leaders. And we've called Dan Ortiz, who is a professor at the University of Virginia School of Law and who wrote a legal brief for a reform group that wants to overturn gerrymandering rules. And Mr. Ortiz, what's the accepted law now when it comes to drawing political districts? What is in, what is out? What can you and can you not do?
Basically, under the existing rule now, anything goes. That's the federal rule. It may be that, you know, particular states have constitutional restrictions against it, but the general federal rule is you can sometimes get into trouble, but practically the bar is so high they've never found a problem.
But just to be clear, while you can gerrymander to benefit the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, there's other kinds of gerrymandering you can't do, right?
Right. You can't do racial gerrymandering unless you're actually working to make sure there's some representation for a minority that would otherwise be underrepresented.
And even that you have to do very carefully.
Yes, but when it comes to politics, at least until now, almost anything goes.
So what's wrong with that?
Well, there are four major problems with it. The first is it leads to a kind of partisan distortion. It can keep a party in power that's lost its majority or give a party with a small majority a lot more freedom to move around in. The next danger is that there's a kind of lock-in effect. The House was originally understood and designed to be the most responsive part of the federal government, and this makes it unresponsive. If public sentiment changes greatly, the control of the House might not shift at all. It also makes the individual districts uncompetitive. The strategy here is if you're the party in control, you want to give the other side a few seats, as few as possible, but you want the other party to win by huge majorities in each of those districts so that they waste most of their votes. For your own districts, though, you want very fairly slim majorities, comfortable ones, but slim ones, so you can actually have majorities over as many districts as possible. That means that every single district is basically safe for one party. They're all uncompetitive. And that leads to what may be actually the greatest problem here, which is just political polarization. If every district is safe, the primary is the only election that matters. As we all know, the voters who participate in a primary aren't representative of the electorate as a whole, and in fact aren't even representative of their own party. It's really the party's most vociferous, active, and ideological members who turn out disproportionately to vote in party primaries.
But hold on a second here. When this redistricting is done in states that don't have some independent commission to do it, it's done by an elected legislature or it's done by an elected governor or by both of them. So it is elected officials practicing politics. What's wrong with that?
Well, you want elected officials to practice politics. You want them to play fair, though. On the one hand, when the state legislature and the state governor are controlled by the same political party, they're going to want to do well by their friends in Washington. On the other hand, even when control is split, you find people drawing districts in such a way as to make sure that the incumbents stay in office. It's formed bipartisan gerrymandering, if you will, which leads to exactly these problems. I mean, this is something where you can understand the political incentives, but they become pathological in effect.
Are you concerned at all that you're pointing here at what a lot of people would consider to be a legitimate problem for which there might not be a perfect solution?
I'm very sympathetic to problems where there's a possible political solution. Here, however, when you're talking about this kind of politics, the political system can't really help itself. The incentives here are so high that you can't expect the political system to fix itself, especially in any state where there is not an initiative mechanism.
Dan Ortiz is a professor at the University of Virginia School of Law. Mr. Ortiz, thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.